Welcome to Camera Dojo, the official podcast of CameraDojo.com, where we help you make the most out of your photography. This is your host, Kerry Garrison. And with me once again, and probably setting a record for the fastest turnaround of a repeat guest, is Scott Robert Lim. Welcome back, Scott.
Thank you for having me. I must have impressed you a little bit, huh?
Well, your PR rep pushed me. it's nothing like that. You know, I have you on for a specific reason, and I think it's a topic that is extremely timely right now. And that's the whole concept of photography workshops. And you do workshops, and you have an opinion on them, and I've done workshops, and I have more planned, and there seems to be a certain level of animosity, if you will. Is that probably a good word to put it?
Yeah, I think it's more frustration, too, sometimes, and maybe a bit of jealousy, you know, in there, too. I'm not sure. But yeah, there's definitely kind of people are gun shy about workshops a little bit. It's worth talking about, actually.
Well, I can't think of any given year ever that there has been so many workshops announced and tried to be put on.
Yeah, that's another thing. I mean, just the sheer quantity of workshops without any kind of filtering process and on, you know, kind of helping a person decide on which workshop is, you know, right for them. And so, you know, you can easily load up your plate with workshops like every single day and spend thousands of dollars on them. And you got to be careful on kind of what you spend your money on, just like how you choose a lens, you know. Sometimes we sign up, we will buy a fisheye lens and we never end up using it because we realize that's not our style or that doesn't fit who we are. And I think workshops are the same way. You got to really kind of see what you want to get out of a workshop and where you want to go and see if that workshop's going to fall into, you know, where you're going to.
One thing that I've seen is a trend, and I'm going to try to be as politically correct here as possible, because there's a couple websites out there, and I will put them in the show notes just so that you have a perspective. The first one is Studio Ugly, and the other is Photogzilla, both of which I've been accused of being the person who does them, and I'm not. I will say that.
Really? I never heard that.
I will swear in a stack of Bibles it's not me. Not that I didn't think about it, but I didn't do it, all right? I just, if I was going to do it, I would put my name on it and say so, but I have been asked multiple times if it's me, and it's not, so there, I've said it. The main thing about these two websites is that they really are trying to, in a weird sort of way, educate people on who's running some specific workshops and is this the type of workshop that you should be looking at. Now, it's sort of done in a parody and in one way, and on the other hand, they're trying to, Photogzilla is trying to be very factual about the stories of some of the people that are behind them. But I think what it boils down to is what you really need to do if you are looking to find a workshop for yourself to try and improve your business, improve your craft. You have to find something that fits who you are and what you're trying to accomplish. And a lot of these, I don't want to say they're making promises per se, but they're certainly insinuating quite heavily in some of their promotional videos that if you come to this workshop, you're going to get some magic bullet that is going to take your referral business to the next level, or is going to, you know, get you involved in vendors in, you know, a whole new way. And
yeah,
that to me is kind of pushing it a little bit.
Slightly misleading, I guess, maybe in a way. I don't I kind of hear what's going on in the background. I don't actually get into specifically reading the articles and seeing what promises are made and everything of that nature. But I think part of the situation, too, is that people maybe they've been promised a lot of things before by going to this particular workshop or that particular workshop and spend a lot of money. And not have received the information that's really going to take them to the next level. And so people are just really skeptical now about what, you know, people are offering. And maybe they've taken some workshops from these people before. And maybe, you know, they haven't gotten as much out of it as they wanted to. And that maybe that's part of the reason. But I think also you got to see what type of workshops they are too. And I think, you know, we were talking a little bit about it earlier. There's workshops that kind of can give you inspiration and ideas for marketing and, you know, finding insights about who you are and that type of thing. But I think even before you get into that, I think the mistake that I see a lot of photographers is that they don't spend enough time really honing in on learning the basics and the fundamentals and lighting and posing and all of that stuff, which really is going to take you to the next level, despite, you know, what type of personality you have or what kind of marketing. I always kind of base my whole philosophy around business is creating excellence. And once you start creating excellence, I mean, doors just start opening for you. And I think that's, for me, that's what my main focus is on, you know, helping a person produce excellence in their craft and then building on top of that with all the other type of marketing aspects you can do and having vision and all, et cetera.
But Scott, that doesn't sound like the magic bullet to skyrocket my business to success.
Yeah, you know what? Unfortunately, there is no easy way around becoming a great photographer or elite photographer or a rock star photographer. There are few that certainly rise to the top within a year or two, and that's great. But that is not the normal path. And I think people kind of see these people that maybe have risen to the top very quickly, and they say, hey, I want to do that too. But you know, that's like winning a lottery ticket. Most of us have to really work at our craft. I mean, you look at, you know, like, again, I go back to that good book, Outliers, and they talk about 10,000 hours being kind of the standard amount of time to achieve excellence in your field, which turns out to be about 5 years working 40 hours a week at your craft. So, you know, you really have to put time into photography if you want to really be an elite photographer.
Now, not that there's anything wrong per se about taking workshops that deal with marketing and social networking and vendor relationships. I mean, those are all key pieces of a photography business.
Definitely. Yeah, I kind of go back to the restaurant analogy. You know, you can have great marketing, you can have, you know, all that kind of stuff, but if the food isn't good, who's going to come back for seconds?
Yeah.
You know? And so you have to have something, you have to have some content, some substance there before you do all that kind of marketing and branding and all that. You got to make sure you put out good food first. And I think that's why what people kind of try to take shortcuts and say, hey, this person did great and they just had a blog or whatever. And look at their, you know, top 10 wedding photographer in the world. And this person did that by only, you know, just doing this or putting a video about themselves online or whatever. I think that works, but you definitely have to have some substance behind what you're trying to sell. And that's the first step. And creating that substance or that quality content, you know, it really takes years of practice and dedication.
Well, what about the phrase, those who can do, those who can't teach?
Well, I don't really necessarily believe in
I
that.
would hope not, since you teach workshops, right?
I mean, I think, well, it's true. Well, when I tell people about, I mean, even if they're considering taking my workshop, I say, listen, first of all, I think, especially for photography, you have to kind of look at their imagery. And that's kind of like what when I'm, considering a workshop, especially a photography workshop. I mean, because there's actually workshops just on marketing, in regards to, marketing anything. But when you're going to take a photography workshop, I think a lot of what plays in is that you should kind of respect the person's imagery or be inspired by it or a little bit, or just, in some way appreciate it. And I think that's one of the major things. So when people are considering workshops, I go, well, first of all, look at their imagery. Do you really appreciate what they're doing, or are you inspired by it, or does it move you in any kind of way? And I think that should be one of the first levels that you've got to consider when considering a workshop.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. I mean, if you don't like the person's work that you're going to see, why would you want to learn how to do that?
Yeah. And then at second, on top of that, you've got to see, where they are in, let's say if they're talking about wedding photography, are they still kind of current in that business? And if so, how is their business doing? And you have to say, okay, after that, you got to say, well, what is the makeup of their business? Are they a one-man show? Are they a husband and wife team? Are they multiple photographers? Do they have a whole cast of employees behind them, one doing the editing, one doing the blogging, one doing whatever, and you've got to kind of tie that in of who you are and where you want to go. And so their methods may work great for them, but if it's not, if you're not capable of doing it, then it's not going to work for you. So it's you have to take into those considerations too.
Yeah, now there's been talk about, well, you should ask, how much money did you make off your photography last year, and determine if that makes someone qualified to teach. But at the same time, I look at that and I go, well, if Scott Kelby was to do a workshop, I mean, this is a guy who made like $6 million last year, but probably almost zero off of his quote unquote photography. But he's by no means a poor instructor, or is not qualified to teach.
Definitely. And again, that's an interesting concept to talk about, really. Where is that line and what you should consider? But it does really come down to the imagery that that person can create and capture. And I think that's a lot of it too. And whether it's their lighting style or the way they pose a subject or whatever it is, there has to be something in there that you value, that you want to learn. Or else you're really, you're not going to gain too much from it if you don't even respect the type of work he does.
Now, let's just assume that someone has, they've got a nice DSLR now, they're learning the basics, and they're going, okay, I want to put some money towards my education. What pieces of the business do you think, and I'll chime in as well, but what do you think that someone should learn first?
You know what, the building blocks? Is that what you're
Yeah.
asking? Well, yeah, definitely you need to know about light, understanding light. You need to know, first of all, how to use available light. And there's different ways of seeing available light that a master photographer can clue you into that can just totally open your eyes on how to see the light. And then, so there's actually using available light. And then the second step on top of that is creating. If you don't see it, can you create it? And that's the second half of that. So I think lighting is two phases in regards to seeing it and using the available light, and then to creating it. And that's a lot of it right there. And then there's, when it comes to portrait and wedding photography, there's how to pose a person, which there's a lot that goes into that. And so when you see a photographer's imagery, you have to kind of look at their posing and say, well, is it current? Is it contemporary? Is it something that I like? Is it something what I want to aspire to in that direction? And that's a bulk of it right there, of and which could take you several years just doing that. And then on top of that, then there's the marketing and the life principles and all that stuff that you add on top of that. And then when you're combining all those type of things, then I think you have the basis of really taking your business to the next level.
I think that's a good point, because I always say, and I'll change the last word a little bit, you should learn your stuff and get that down. If you aren't comfortable shooting in manual mode, for example, I don't think you're quite ready to be taking a marketing class or spending $2,000 on a SEO class for your website.
Yeah, like I said, because you can do that, but if you don't have the content to back it up, it's just kind of a waste. It's like, advertising a restaurant with average food or below average food. What good is that? And so you really have to have the content first. And I think that's a very good point about learning the basics. Oh, why do I need to learn the basics? Well, I think the thing is that you need to know the basics like it's the back of your hand. Because it's only until then where you can truly be creative and unleash your vision. So, what I always say is like you have to get the basics down first, and know that like it's second nature to you. And then that is the point when you can start to find your creative vision. But so many people try to take shortcuts and they try to, they do their, they try to execute their creative vision before they even have the basics. And so you're going to have some work that's going to be very inconsistent or not based on something that's not fundamentally sound. And I think that's the step that a lot of people try to, kind of, they don't have the basics down first, but they go straight to the vision part, the creativity part, finding yourself and finding your unique brand. You can't find your unique brand until you've kind of mastered the fundamentals first. And that's, I think, a lot of mistakes that I see in photographers as I teach around the world is that wanting to master the basics first. And then once they get that, you can see that they can really grow into their vision and they get so excited. But they just need those fundamental tools first and those basic skills down first before they build on top of their vision.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. I mean, if you're trying to build a big old house on a deck of cards, it's going to crumble at some point, and it's not going to really be there for you. You have to have that good foundation, and I've been saying that for a long time. But I think human nature is part of the problem. And I remember back to a psychology class that I took, and they had done an experiment with a bunch of elementary school kids, and they gave them all a small bag of M&Ms and said, "Now you're free to eat these, eat them today, eat them tonight, whatever. But if you bring it back tomorrow unopened, you'll get the giant bag of M&Ms."
Yeah.
And the vast majority, it was something like 95% of the kids came back with, then they had eaten the M&Ms that night. And
Right.
it's because we have ingrained in ourselves that we are a society of instant gratification.
That's so
And
true.
trying to find these magic bullets or the one nugget that's going to help, people don't want to do the work to actually build up the skill set and everything else. They think it's going to be, I can go to one workshop and get all the skills I need to be, you know, a professional photographer. And it's not that I don't want to encourage people to go to workshops, because I think there are fantastic workshops out there. There's tons of them, and I could name names. I mean, there's yours. There's great, the Grace, Gray Photography. They're fantastic. There's a lot of really good ones out there, but that's not the end of it. It's going out and practicing and implementing and things like that. And here, I just decided to start an Orange County users group. We're going to meet the second Tuesday of every month, and we're going to shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot and help people develop skills. And I think that you need to do that in order for the rest of it to come together.
Yeah, I really agree on that. People are just trying to find that magic button or that one little, you know, trick that's going to do it for them. But it's really a long haul. I look at most people, photographers getting into the business, you know, they'll give it a year, maybe 2 years, run out of money or want to just stop. All of a sudden it's like, hey, you know what? I've been doing this for a year, and what? I'm not making $100,000 a year with my photography? Wait a second. And then just give up right away. But you have to go out and you have to be dedicated and have a passion for it, and to be willing to invest a lot of time and resources into it, and simply go out and just start shooting. You know, and I see that a lot of times too, is like a lot of photographers want to be book smart before they even go and take their first click of the shutter, because they're afraid of making a mistake. But you know, a lot of the getting better, as you know, in anything, in sports or in anything, is just going out, trying, making mistakes, learning from that, and going on. And so that's the kind of mentality that we have to do, and it's just simply going out there and start shooting. And that's a great thing that you're starting there, because that's really what a lot of photographers need, is just to go out and shoot. There comes a point where it's kind of like learning guitar, where usually your knowledge far out, you know, is further ahead than your actual ability. And so in your head, you know, and can do all these chords in your head and know what they're supposed to, how they're supposed to be fingered and all that. But actually to be able to do it, or to play those scales, to do it, is far behind what your mind already knows. And so your physical ability kind of has to catch up to where you want to go.
Yeah. Another group I'm involved with, and I want to give some shout out to them, because I think it is a good thing, is the LA Shoot This group. And I was actually with them this past weekend. Myself and Greg Bumate did a 30-minute presentation. He did one on composition basics, and I did one on off-camera lighting. And then we split the groups up, and we had a bunch of models with us, and we were working with people to show them how to get the best images possible. And this is not to be a slam on anybody whatsoever, because you have to get started somewhere. But the vast majority of people did not come with flash. I mean, other than their pop-up flash.
Right.
They had nothing else. And that to me is a red flag there. If you don't have at least the equipment to be able to take your stuff to the next level, why would you even begin to think about taking a workshop on how to use that stuff when there's nothing you can do when you come home?
Yeah, you know what I've kind of noticed, a trend of some photographers is that what they like to do is just buy like really low light, really fast lenses, you know, $1,000, $2,000, and shoot everything wide open at 1.2. And, you know, with the new cameras that go up to ISO 5 million and 3, you know, you can shoot with, you know, in the dark. And I think what photographers are kind of doing is just blurring out everything and you know, putting the subject in focus. And, you know, that's fine and everything, but really it's, you know, the great images are your ability to use light and to get it off your camera. And there's a level, you know, on top of that. And I think it's easy to do that. It's easy to go out actually and buy a $2,000 lens and come across and get these kind of images with the shallow depth of field and get the ooh and ah right away, the instant ooh and ah. But you know what? Everybody can do that. I mean, not everybody, but if you've got a little bit of cash, you know, you can shoot everything, get some nice lenses and just shoot everything wide open. But then everybody's stuff starts looking that way.
Well,
you know?
And what do you do when you're outside in the sun and the no matter what ISO you're shooting at, the person's going to have raccoon eyes.
Yeah, right.
You know, you've got this beautiful blue sky, and no matter what you do, that sky is going to be completely blown out because you can't get your shutter speed high enough to do that and still fill in the person. Or you've got some weird lighting or some shadow that's falling that you have to overcome, or it's just too dark and you have to fill it in. Or, I mean, I could go on and on and on about all the situational things where, and I did make a joke about this when I was with the LA Shoot This group, is to me, when someone says I'm a quote unquote natural light shooter, it means they don't know how to use flash.
Yeah, really? I know. It's like when I do a lot of my workshops and, you know, I go, was that the first time? You know, I do a little demonstration and I help them with their off-camera flash. And guess what? We're doing it in manual too sometimes, which is pretty amazing. and I ask them, was that the first time you've ever used an off-camera flash? And they're like, yeah, this is amazing. You know, it's like a new, I don't know. It's like a rebirth for them. It's just, it's a new tool. It's something, wow, I didn't know I had this much power, you know, and it's great to see them just light up with what they can do with off-camera lighting. And it's so rewarding to kind of show them what's possible with lighting.
I think that's absolutely true. And one of the problems I think is there's an intimidation factor for people getting started in that. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, I'll show up and I've got my light stands and my 580 EX2s and pocket wizards and beauty dishes. And, you know, I have got the gear coming out of my ears, and people just like, okay, I'm just, I'm not, that's $1,000 worth of stuff or more, you know, more. In fact, you know, $1,200 worth of just lighting gear. And they're just like, okay, I'm just going to go back to my pop-up flash, where you certainly don't need to start there. And I think that's a good place for us to kind of like, let's take this back. We've talked about how, you know, you need to learn the basics. I've certainly have just finished a series of podcasts, and you were on one of them, about off-camera flash. But let's talk about actually getting started. You know, let's drill it down to the absolute basics that someone might need to actually get started trying some of these techniques without just absolutely breaking the bank or having to mortgage their house.
You mean in regards to off-camera flash or learning?
Absolutely. You know, because now you're a fan, and I've used them for a long time, what I prefer to call, or I refer to as, poverty wizards.
Right.
And these are little inexpensive transmitters and receivers that you can buy on eBay or places like Gadget Infinity, and you're going to drop anywhere from 50 to 100 bucks on a set.
Definitely. I mean, yeah, I have a set that I've tested out that I've imported in, and I really love them to death. I've used them in every single professional situation. I just went to Seattle and shot a $10,000 wedding and used them, and no problem. And so, yeah, you can get some very inexpensive equipment out there. To basically, you can get some $30 flashes, $30 to $75 flashes, and a set of, you know, poverty wizards for $100 or less, and outfit it and go for it, and you can get some very professional results. And you know what's interesting is, it's, you know, when invariably whenever I'm going to do in the Texas school this week, and I get a lot of people emailing before the school, hey, what kind of equipment do I need, and you know, what's going on? People are so kind of into equipment, but it's really you don't. It's more about knowledge. It's more about knowing how to use the equipment that you have, because you don't need a lot of it to produce some great photography. In fact, the first day of my Japan workshop, we were walking around and going to lunch. I simply took out my G10, something that just had a hot shoe on it, a point and shoot, and I was taking images, and you know, I was producing some good stuff really with just my G10 and an off-camera flash, a Vivitar 285. And you don't need a whole lot. It's what you know, really. The equipment, nowadays, the equipment shouldn't be a barrier to creating professional imagery.
Yeah, that's a great point as well. And you actually brought up the flash I was going to mention, which is one that I started off with very early on, is the Vivitar 285HV.
And yes,
these, you can buy them for $80 brand new. And mm-hmm. I've seen them on eBay go for, I think I bought one on eBay for $40 once. So they're great. They're great power. I mean, pretty significant power for a little flash. They run on AA batteries. They've got a lot of control versus... Yeah, and that's if you're buying just a manual flash, this is the one recommendation I'm going to say, is make sure you find one that does have a good range of control, not just half and full. You want as much variation in the power output as possible, preferably down to 1/128, 1/64, 1/32nd, one.
Yeah, all the I'd way say up. The bare minimum would be down to 1/16th. That's the bare minimum on that. Lower, of course, is better, but definitely, yeah, you need a range. But yeah, that's why I like those 285. Now make sure that you get the HV, because if you happen to use it on your camera and you're using the old school ones, the voltage is so high, you might blow up your camera, and that's not cool. But there's certain ways that you can test the voltage on it too to make sure it's okay. But if you get the HV, which stands for high voltage, that's kind of contradictory in terms, right?
Yeah,
but it is. If you get a HV, then you can put it on the new DSLRs and use it actually on your camera too, and it won't blow it up. You don't have to worry about that. It's been redesigned for the new digital world. But what I like about that is it has some auto sensors in it. So all you got to do is there's a little dial on the side, and you just pick your ISO, and then you choose what f-stop you're going to shoot, and then you look at the color in there. So if it says f8 and purple, then you just set your camera to f8, the ISO that you had programmed in on the top of the dial. So whether it's 100 or 400, turn your ISO there. Then you turn your f-stop to f8 to match the flash. And then you simply put the flash on purple, and you take the shot, and you know what? You're going to be pretty, pretty darn close, and you're going to realize how easy it is to shoot with one of these old school flashes. It's just that people just don't know how to do it. But it's amazing the type of the stuff that you can do right off the bat by simply reading the manual and
a little RTFM there.
Yeah, and going out and doing it. And, you know, a lot of people have those flashes, but we've never really know how to use the auto mode because there's these dials and colors and, oh, what the heck? But it's a lot easier than people think.
Yeah, that 285HV, that's a great, great purchase right there. Now, if you already have an old 285 that you had back in a film camera, there's a little adapter that you can buy that will reduce the voltage, and I think it runs like $20 or something. So, but if you have the HV, you're in solid shape. You're good to go, and I highly recommend that. And what's nice about that one, there's actually plastic inserts that you can get for different colors. You know, the amber, the blue, green. It comes with like five different colors, and they just slide right in. So you have that ability as well, because I've still have one of those kits.
And if you want to control the light beam, like either make it wider or narrower, it has a kind of built-in zoom, so you can, you know, pull it out to zoom it and push it in to make it more wide. And now you can buy an aftermarket diffuser cap on it for $12 on eBay, and you can buy the little plastic, you know, like you're talking about, the gels that slide into it, so you don't have to use gaffer tape or, you know, Velcro. It's got a built-in slot, so you can just throw in red, green, or whatever, orange in there. So if you want to match the temperature of light, then it's already built in there. So it's like, you know, it is a great all-in-one flash, because you got the auto mode where you don't even have to think, really. And then you've also got the manual mode too. And so it's very, very versatile.
So if we're looking at a Vivitar 285, somewhere around $80, you got a cheap Poverty Wizard, Cactus, V2, any of these things. The remotes, it's going to run you know, depending on features. Because you can get cheap ones for, like I said, around $50. As you pay more, you're going to have more channels to choose from, less interference, greater range. So there are reasons to spend a little more money for kind of future-proofing yourself a little bit. But let's just call it another $75 for a decent starter kit.
Okay.
So now we're at 80 plus 75, and then you're going to need a light stand. You know, I go to Pro Photo Connection here in Irvine. I was looking at 12-foot stands the other day for $24.
Yeah. You know what? I don't even use light stands, because I am always shooting with an assistant, and so I just have the voice-activated light stand.
Yes, a Vols. Yes.
And it's much quicker and faster, and I always shoot with an assistant. So I rarely use stands other than, you know, setting up my lighting for receptions. But when I'm going out and doing a session, I always have a person with me, and it's much faster and more versatile and things like that. So, yeah, but yeah, definitely a stand's $20. I mean, what? We're not even over $200 yet.
Yeah, and what about modifiers? Well, you're going to need to first, hold on, we need a way, if we're going to use a light stand, we need a way to put the flash on the light stand, so we'll probably need a swivel mount. So we're into like $14, $15.
Yep, $15.
And that's for a good one. And then what about modifiers?
I think the quickest and easiest in this light, because I'm all about wedding photographer, I'm all about on location, what's small, what's light, what's easy for people to use. I just use simply a shoot-through umbrella. And so I really like the effect of doing a portrait and just firing it through and opening up an umbrella. You can get these umbrellas cheap, like less than $10 on eBay, shoot through umbrella, like a 30 inch or something like that. And then if you put a diffuser on cap on top of that and an umbrella, you're going to get a really nice soft light. And you'll be amazed if you put that umbrella and that diffuser kind of right above your subject. And then you fire that light right on top of her or him or whatever, it's going to have some beautiful soft light, and it's going to be, you're going to, you know, just for a very little amount of money, you can create some very professional type of lighting.
Now, in the interest of full disclosure, I am sponsored by Westcott, so I have Westcott umbrellas, but I got to say, I have umbrellas that I bought on eBay 5 years ago for $5 that still are in perfect shape. You know?
Well, so you kind of get what you pay for too. So like you can get, I do, you know, actually I do have some Westcott stuff, and they are really well built, and I do have some kind of lesser cost stuff that I've gotten eBay too, and I do have to say that, you know, a couple of them broke already, but hey, they're disposable, right?
At that price point,
they
are. And
yeah.
The one big, huge difference that you'll find in these, and this is just a tip for anybody using umbrellas, a high quality one like from Westcott, the shaft will have a solid end on it. So when you tighten it down in the holder, you're not going to distort it. Where these cheap ones from eBay and stuff, they're just going to be real thin metal and they're going to be hollow. So take a number two pencil and just shove it in there.
That's a good idea, actually. Never
and they're usually that same shape, and you can take a pencil and just shove it in there, and now you can crank down on it without ruining the shaft. There's my big DIY tip for the day. So if we're into $10 with shipping for an umbrella, right now I've got this added up. I'm at $205.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
Compare that to a 580 EX2 by itself being 400 and almost $500.
Yeah.
So you can start very, very affordably. I mean, you're not going to be spending as much on your light as you did on your camera body. That's for sure. And this certainly works for you. This is not something that we're saying, well, here's the cheesy way to get started. You actually,
no.
As a wedding photographer, this is equipment that you use
on
a shoot.
Yes, I use it. I've used it last week, like I said, I'm Seattle doing a $10,000 wedding, and used it just a few days ago. What did I have with me? Yeah, I've used my Vivitar 285s, umbrellas, and exactly the Poverty Wizards, and I do have to say, when you're using the Poverty Wizards, that you gotta use. I prefer the alkaline batteries, and even with the 285s, actually, I like alkaline batteries. For some reason, I think they like the higher voltage. And so if they don't start to trigger or whatever, just make sure you have good batteries in there and you'll be fine. But other than that, yeah, oh man, it's amazing. That's what I use. In fact, it's a little bit funny, frustrating for me to go back to TTL because I just like the control of manual. And I even like the control of using the, you know, the 285 has the sensor built on the flash. And so you can kind of control that flash more because it's not synced in with your whole TTL system with your camera. So what's happening is that the light is being read by that flash itself. So let's say I set up the 285 and it tells me to put it on yellow, and this, and I matched up my f-stop and my ISO and I'm ready, and boom, I shoot it and it's just a little bit hot. Well, I can control that light by just simply turning up my aperture to make a smaller hole for the light to come through, and I can fine-tune my light very quickly. And so it's automatic, and if I don't hit it right off the bat, with one little adjustment, I can fine-tune the light exactly where I want it. And so it is so I like that cross between it is automatic, but then I still have control over it by using my f-stop. Now that might be jumping ahead of people and people might, what the heck are you saying? But I do like that cross control that you can do with the old school flashes that actually meter on the flash itself.
Yeah, see, I haven't had a 285 in a long time, so I actually am trying. I got to pick up another one because mine died, and I already had my 580 EX2, so I never bothered to replace it, but it was such a good flash. And
they're durable. I mean, you
really
can drop them.
It's really a shame that it finally croaked on me. But that, you know, I just started using the new Pocket Wizard Flex system. It's all ETTL. I can switch it to manual. I can, you know, I can go into manual mode and remotely control the output of a remote flash. I mean, yeah. Don't get me wrong, it's freaking cool. Okay. When you get right down to it, to be able to say, you know what, that fill light just a little too hot, I'm just going to dial it down and I'm 20 feet away. There's something to be said for that. Is it necessary? No. Convenient? Yes. But you get what you pay for again, right? I mean, we're not talking about $50 remotes here. We're talking about $600-$700 in remotes. But the fact is, we're just trying to make sure that you understand you don't need to fork out that kind of money up front to get started doing this type of stuff.
And you know what the beauty of this is? The more you practice, the easier it gets. And really, you go out for a day and you start doing it and you get over the fear of it and you go, wow, hey, I can do this. And you have success with it and you start to understand it more and more and you start to understand the way flash works, and it's not necessarily controlled by your shutter, but aperture and that nature. And you can, and it really just gets easier and easier. And really, when you start to do it for about a year, really, you're just as comfortable doing it in manual as you are in TTL. And so I'm at the point where I just do everything manual now because it's just as easy for me, and I just like the control. And not to saying that TTL isn't great and, you know, having all that stuff. But, either way, it's definitely doable.
Well, you also, to me, and again, this is going to be very opinionated here, I think you should learn the manual first, because the ETTL is not going to give you what you want every time. It's going to give you what it thinks is correct every time. And those two things are not necessarily in sync.
I agree, definitely. It's just like what I said earlier about, you know, the M on your camera. The M stands for manual. There's a reason why it's there, and there's a reason why we often go into manual mode, is because we want control. And that's why I wrote that learning guide on using a manual flash, because it's, you can control it, you can fine tune it the way you want to, and that's what I like about it. Is the control, me being in control.
But that, to me, that's also a good reason why you should, if you can and it's available in your area, get involved with a local club. And here in Orange County, we have several that are going on now. Nancy Ramos, you know, has a thing going on. I've got this new OC Photo Club coming up.
Right.
They shoot this. If you are fortunate to live in an area where there's a lot of people and there is a photography club, join it, because it's going to give you access to other people, to other ways of doing things, to regular events where you're going out and shooting in a variety of different environments and learning from each other and seeing how other people work. And in my case, I'll have people, I'll like, here, put the controller on your camera. No. Okay, now I'm going to go over here and you tell me what you want me to do with the lights. And I'll be the voice operated light stand for somebody to help them improve their work and see how to use this equipment. So there's usually a handful of people who are more experienced. There's a handful of people who are less experienced, and they just work together and coming up with different ways of doing things and learning new equipment and new gear and new techniques. So to me, being involved in a club like that is extremely valuable for learning. And in fact, if you have a good one, and I think the ones that we're involved in here are good in that sense, that we do these little mini workshops first and then we go off and do the shooting, that you can pick up far more in an evening of a meeting like that than sometimes you can for spending a couple $100 on a workshop. And I hate to say that, but sometimes it's true.
Well, yeah, it just kind of, that just kind of reminds me of something that I always say. It's like, we're kind of defined by the communities that we get involved with. And so I think when you're beginning and you don't know a lot of the basics, you know what? Everything is great. All the books are great because you're going to learn so much. And there's so much to learn. But I think what's the situation when you've got an experienced photographer, and then let's say they're involved with wedding photography and they're eking out a living with it, and they're, you know, maybe they're getting paid $2,500 or $3,500 a wedding, and they just, where do they go? You know, some of those beginning workshops is definitely, they've kind of, you know, can do that, outgrown that. Where do they go? What should they look for in workshops? When you're starting off, all the workshops are great, getting involved in your local things and your free things, and that's wonderful. But I think there's a point where you're a photographer is trying to get to that next level and become a $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 photographer. And I think that's kind of a totally different ball game. And then that's when you have to really analyze who is leading this workshop. Do you respect their imagery? Do you like it? Do you get inspired by it? Do you, you know, what does their studio look like and all? And then those factors kind of evolve from there. But certainly in the beginning, I think everything is great. And you can learn a lot. But then as you kind of progress with your photography, that's, I think, when you have to do a lot more of your homework in regards to workshops.
I think that may be part of it, is as we talked about earlier, you know, people are looking for the magic bullet, they're looking for the one little nugget, but they're also jumping the gun and getting involved with ones that are, you know, possibly a little beyond their skill level.
Right.
Needing to tone it down a bit and figure out, is this the right one for me to get the skill set that I need for where I'm at today?
Right, right. Yeah, and they have to kind of analyze where they are at. And I think, you know, that's a good time. You know, it's always good to have kind of a mentor that they can evaluate your work and see where you need to go with your photography, and that's always good to have. You kind of need a sounding board of photographers that are, you know, more experienced than you, that can kind of give you some good guidance on what your next step should be. And unfortunately, you know, when we want to become a professional photographer, we are pretty much on our own. There is no, as of now, there's really no structured formula or structured list of classes that you could take that would kind of guarantee you coming out in the end being a good photographer. We're kind of left to our own devices to try to figure that out. That's what I try to do with my workshops, is to create a kind of a systematic learning system for people to kind of go through, and so they can at the end kind of incorporate their vision and become a high level elite wedding and portrait photographer. But as of now, that's really hard. I mean, there's all these workshops out there. You know, everybody's given workshops now, and then there's no filtering process. There's no, you know, systematic way to approach all the workshops that are out there, and that's part of the problem. So that makes it especially, you know, we have to do our homework in regards to deciding what workshops we want to take.
You know, one of the things that I don't see is when I'm looking at all this plethora of workshops, what I rarely ever see is a paragraph that says, who is this workshop for?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, because when I'm like signing up for different webinars or other things, it's usually pretty specific, you know, who is this for? Or even when you're reading the synopsis of a book, who is this for? It's for absolute beginners. Great. Now I know that book may not be for me. You know, it's for, you know, absolute top end professionals who are already making 10 grand a wedding and need to know how to contact PR agencies for celebrities. Probably not for me, you know, but
right.
So I think that would be a great start. It's just the people who are teaching the workshops to say who this is for and who are the best types of students for their types of workshops versus just kind of throwing the gauntlet out there and hoping to fill it up with the whole range of people. Now, the one thing I wanted to be very careful of was trying not to turn this into a commercial for Scott Robert Lim's, you know, world tour. And even though, you know, I'll come out and say, I'm going to be there in LA. I'm going to help you out with it. I'm going to be a little group leader or awesome. Something, you know.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Thing.
That's great. But why don't you tell me in a paragraph who your workshop is for?
Yeah, my workshop is for the person who really wants to become a professional photographer. Like, that is their goal. Or they want to find out if they, you know, they can make it as a professional photographer, if they're cut out for it. And that's really kind of who I cater to. And I like, and also I've kind of, for that person who's just been maybe in their career, they've been doing pretty good with their wedding photography, but they're just stuck at a certain level. They can't get past the $2,500 mark, or they can't get past the $3,500 mark. And they want to just become more of an elite photographer and really make it, you know, have, not that they're going to get rich, but a comfortable living and move to that next level. That's really where my current workshops are kind of geared for, is getting to that next level of becoming that elite wedding and portrait photographer. That's kind of where I kind of hone in and what I kind of specialize in. And a lot of that is, you know, getting to that next level, you know, going from 35 to 75. It's funny. It's like, of course, there's certain abilities that and skills you've got to learn. But a lot of that, getting to that next level, is what really holds a person back, is not really the technical aspects of it, but it's really more of self-confidence and how they, you know, set up their business and all those type of things, and how they present themselves and all that kind of stuff. And so it's very interesting, the dynamic. It was very interesting, you know, a while back I would see two photographers with the same ability, very good photographers, and one photographer just kind of taken off and soaring, and the other photographer just kind of not really getting off the ground. And that really intrigued me. It's like, hey, you know what, I mentor both these people, they both have great ability, and I can see one really succeeding and one just kind of sputtering. What's the deal here? And that really kind of intrigued me. So After that point, what I started doing is kind of infusing a lot of life skills into my photography program after, of course, or concurrently as they're learning the basics. And it's all based on that. They've got to learn how to learn the basics and then, you know, create excellence. And then on top of that, that's when you get into vision and having the courage to invest in yourself and self-confidence and going forward and things like that.
So I'm gonna put you on the spot real quick, and I'm gonna say, what would you think are gonna be the top three takeaways that someone's gonna get from your workshop?
Okay, they're gonna get a basic understanding of light. Then they're gonna get an understanding of how to pose somebody in a contemporary way. A kind of high fashion glamour, because I think the elite photographer in this business knows how to make a woman look amazing. They know how to take a photograph of a bride and, wow, man, that looks like it should belong on the cover of Vogue magazine. And so that's two things that they're going to get. And the third thing is that they're going to get kind of life skills. That's going to kind of put everything together for them to have a right perspective, to give them, to inspire them, to give them self-confidence about who they are and to bring them to that next level. And I say those are the three things really that I concentrate on: light, posing, and life skills.
That's a good combo.
Yeah, it's been working pretty well. And you know, literally, I've had people come back to my workshops literally 10 times or more. And that's like, wow, I'm so honored to be able to say that. And that's kind of a another thing that I wanted to bring up with talking about workshops. Now I totally lost my train of thought. Senior moment.
It happens to the best of us.
What was the other? Anyways, it'll come again. But those are the basically the three things that I focus on.
And just briefly, what cities and dates do you have coming up?
You know what? That's a good one. Because I'm all over my schedule is so hectic. Well, first of all, you can't get into it now, but this Sunday I'll be off to the Texas school and be teaching there. But in May in Los Angeles, which is the one you will be showing up with, and we will be honored by your presence. That is in May 14th. And that's going to be in the Hollywood area. But you can go to my website and check that out and find out where it's at and so forth. If you go to scottrobertworldtour.com, you can find everything there. And so that's definitely one there. And then the next month in June, we have one in San Francisco, which is going to be pretty awesome. We've already figured out the theme for that one. What we're going to do is we found this fashion designer who designs those Chinese dresses. I'm not sure if you've seen it, those really nice tight fitting with the high slit on the leg, the in the mood for love type of she yeah. So this designer friend of ours is gonna loan us her gowns, and so we're gonna go out on the streets of Chinatown, San Francisco at night and take these amazing in the mood for love photos. You're welcome to come to that one too.
Oh,
Now
I'm there.
that one's going to be in June, June 11th. And these are one day workshops. And so how I like to arrange my workshops is it's kind of like a half day, 3 or 4 hours of teaching, and then going out and practical 3 or 4 hours of shooting. And it's actually portfolio building, so we will have several models there. And so you'll be able to shoot any one of these models, and or you can simply just follow me around and see what I'm doing and ask me questions and like, why did you pose her here, or what setting are you using? So if you're a little bit more advanced and you want to just go out and shoot and practice yourself, you can, or you can watch me for a little while and then do your own thing, or you can just follow me the entire time. And so and that's kind of like how I'm going to work the Los Angeles one too. And so, or you could go to the different leaders and see what they're doing too. So it's a really good, it's a really great community that we're building. I don't want to sound like a commercial, but
That's what I said.
I
There's
am.
always that fine line. But while we're at it, I am going to go ahead and give a little plug for another workshop that is making the rounds right now. And this is Sill Arena's speed lighting workshop.
Ooh,
And
nice.
it's going to be San Francisco, Washington, D.C., L.A., Atlanta, Houston, Chicago, Boston, London, Paso Robles, and a couple other cities. And this is really to just dial in your skills when using speed lights, the
Nice.
ETTL versus manual, gelling, corded versus cordless solutions, high speed sync, turning noon to night, freezing action. So if you want to take those speed lighting skills just to the next degree, Sill is probably one of the best guys I know to teach that specific thing. This isn't about weddings. It's not about posing. It's not about
Yeah,
business.
it's just
This is speed light. This is an intensive speed lighting course. So if
nice.
you're looking for that, it's going to be a good one. I'm going to that one too because I think Sill is great, and I love using speed lights for stuff and versus
Oh, yeah.
lights. So this is one that I'm not going to miss either. So if you're in the LA area for this one, go as well.
What's the date on that one? Do you know?
In LA, it is May 15th.
May 15th. Oh, okay. Well, that's right after my workshop.
Yes, it
That's
is, as a
awesome.
matter of fact. So I have a busy week.
That's amazing.
So yeah, those are ones that I guess are going to have the Camera Dojo seal of approval right now. There's so many out there, and if I went through and I analyzed 50 of them, I could probably come up with 20 or 30 really good ones. But I do recommend Scott's workshops because you know what you're getting. He just explained to you what you're going to get. If that's for you, great. Sills, if you want to just become an expert on speed lighting, go to Sills' workshop. Preferably, you're going to go to both, and you're going to say that I recommended them. We'll see how that works. Again, it's finding why you should go to that one, who it's being taught by, and is that the skills that you're looking to pick up right now? And I really think that's the end message that we need to get out.
Definitely. I think you hit it right on the head with that. And it's great talking about these things. I mean, there's so many workshops, and there's really no need to be gun shy about them. I mean, we need to keep investing and learning in ourselves, but we just kind of have to have the right perspective. And I'm glad we had a chance to talk about these things.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Scott, it's been a pleasure having you back on the show, and I'm sure we'll probably do this again in the near future. And I look forward to being at your workshop coming up next month, and it's just going to be a lot of fun. I encourage people to sign up. Again, if this is what's for you, then sign up, right? I mean, if you're looking for these skills, great. If you're not looking to be that type of photographer, you want to be a product photographer, probably not the workshop for you.
Yeah, take a look at my imagery. If you like what you see, that's basically what I teach. You know, it's very easy.
All right.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure coming on, and I enjoy talking with you.
Yeah, absolutely, Scott. Well, everybody, Scott, real quick, why don't you throw out your websites?
Yes, just go to scottrobertgallery.com. Everything is connected to there.
Your Twitter and your Facebook stuff on there.
I got Twitter, Facebook, my school workshops, everything. It's all related through scottrobertgallery.com.
Excellent. And, of course, you're listening to Camera Dojo at cameradojo.com. And it's all over the place at facebook.com/cameradojo and twitter.com/cameradojo. And I might as well put in a plug for our new sister site, HomeTheaterDojo.com. So if you're into home theater stuff, there's a whole website coming up on home theater products and stuff for without trying to break the bank. And this has been your host, Kerry Garrison, and we'll catch you next time.